Welcome everybody, Bruchim Abayim. It's a tremendous chus to be able to gather together with, it's like an ingathering of the exiles where we can gather together ladies from the US, from England, from Eretz Yisrael, from places in Europe, and we can come together to seek out the word of Hashem. What does Hashem want from us inside our minds? There's a lot going on outside in our lives, but inside our minds, what does he want from us? And certainly, Habala Taher Messiah, I say the one who comes to purify himself is helped in seeking and searching out for ourselves. Menuchas HaNefesh, peace of mind. We're certainly going to be helped because Menuchas HaNefesh is a sine qua non. It is an absolute starting point for us in Shmiras Mitzvahs, in doing mitzvahs, in living a full life, a person in a state of tirfas hadas, a person in a state of disorganization of mind, which characterizes the way a lot of us go through our days, but a person in such a state, unfortunately, cannot take full use of the abilities that Hashem has given him. We know that. We know that when we're a little bit crazy, when we're overworked, underrested, underfed, overstressed, that we're not making full use of our abilities. And so achieving a baseline, menuchas hanefesh, a state of mind where there's peace within our mind, where we're settled, this is going to give us an entirely different quality of life, be'ezras Hashem. So, I'm Chaya Hinder Allen, and our topic of discussion for this afternoon, for this evening, is eliminating fear, worry, and guilt, and embracing a life of true peace of mind. Be'ezras Hashem Yisbarach, I hope that we will come away tonight with some practical ways that we can apply right away to our lives to make a very big difference in removing worry, guilt, and fear, and achieving a sustainable menuchas hanefesh. I'm going to pretend initially, okay, this is a little bit of a pretend here. I'm going to pretend that you've signed up for a class entitled How to Make Yourself Scared Stiff, Worried Sick, and Guilty as Anything. Okay, let's just pretend for a moment that that's the class you've signed up for here tonight. Ladies, don't go off the line yet, okay? But if I would say, okay, anybody any ideas? How can you make yourself scared stiff, worried sick, and guilty as anything? I believe that everybody on the line could come up with some really easy steps that we can all take to make ourselves, you know, scared silly, terrified, full of panic, worry, guilt. Oh yeah, we could do guilt really, really easily. We're all Jewish, right? We can do guilt. So basically, it's as easy as anything to get ourselves into these states. Why do we find it challenging to get ourselves out? So what are the easy ways to get in? Okay, if we want to scare ourselves silly, if we want to really petrify ourselves, all we need to do is a few pictures here and there, right? Recall some news headlines from the last few months, maybe a soundtrack, a scary kind of music we could play in the background, and that's it. We're gone. We're a basket case. It won't take very long for us to slip into deep despair and fear, and it will take us a long time to get out of it. And we can do that to ourselves in two easy steps. Pictures and music, either music or voices, what people are saying to us, that can create worry, it can create fear, it can create high anxiety. And we all know how to do that very, very well. If we really want to get into the habit of doing this, all we have to do is practice every day a few minutes of really scary pictures, really worrying scenes of what the worst possible scenario could be in the future. And if we practice this every day, then we could likely live a life of fear and worry. If we don't want to do that, then modern technology has come up with one of the best sellers of all time, and this is called vehicles of mass distraction. All we have to do is distract ourselves, and then we think we won't feel worry, fear, guilt, as long as I'm distracted enough with my phone, with its jingles, or with my, even with homework, housework, as long as I keep myself busy with inane conversations, I'm going to be busy distracting myself from the thoughts that are going on in my mind, because I don't actually want to experience this fear and guilt and worry. And so I distract myself. But we cannot be happy and we cannot achieve menuchas and nefesh from weapons of mass distraction. We cannot do that. We can't achieve real peace of mind and a life of enduring happiness by distracting ourselves. So we have to come up with something better with which to attack fear, worry, guilt, and anxiety. We have to first of all understand that the kinds of communication that I'm saying to myself, the voices that I'm preparing for myself to hear inside my mind, a lot of them, I'm choosing to replay them, meaning I'm not choosing to interrupt them. Whilst if there was a very loud radio playing in my house, often I would just go along and say, shut this off, please. I don't want to hear this anymore. But when it's very loud noise going on in my mind, I don't seem to be able to shut it off. I'm just used to playing it. I'll never make it. It will never happen. What if really opens up a whole plethora of possibilities? Because it's never ending, the awful possibilities that could happen with the what if. But what if? Who knows what could be what if, right? It could be anything awful. Anything that we've ever heard about, we could put into the what if scenario. Or he'll always be like this. She'll never. Sentences that begin like this, they're going on in our minds that we allow ourselves to replay over and over, they're perpetuating the misery of guilt, of worry, and of fear. So now that we know how to make ourselves miserable with fear, worry, and guilt in two easy steps, we're going to change the title of the class, and we're going to go back to the original class that you signed up for. Take a sigh of relief, ladies. Okay, we've finished with that class for now. So let's understand, in order to deal with negative feelings, and these are all negative feelings, we have to understand the words of Rav Dessler. Rav Dessler says in Michtav Mi'Eliyahu that there is one etza, one piece of advice, and that is tziyurei halev, pictures of the mind. What's this advice for? We say in Aleinu every day, you should know it today. Know the truth that is HaKadosh Baruch Hu and His goodness. And you shall return it to your heart. You shall make this a deep acquisition and feel it. So Rav Dessler has a chapter entitled Darkei HaHashava El Halev, ways to assimilate information. We're not supposed to just leave information in books or in a computer hard drive. We're supposed to assimilate the information, elavavecho, into our hearts. Explains of Dessler, there is one way to do this. One piece of advice that works in how to assimilate into our hearts the information that we might know in our minds. And that is tziyurei halev, pictures of the mind. And he says, he brings down in the name of Rav Simcha Zisel Breda, the Alter of Kelm, who asks the question, how were our avos, our forefathers, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and all the Gedolim, all the great Torah teachers of the generations, how were they different than us? In what way was their power greater than ours? And he answers, they understood the power of Tziyurei Halev. They understood the power of forming pictures within our minds, within ourselves. Rav Berzovsky, the grandson of the Slonim Rebbe, of the Nesiva Shalom, explains that lev over here means our mind, pictures of the mind. The pictures that we create and that we see in our minds, they are going to arouse within ourselves the feelings. And it's up to us to take the steering wheel in our hands and choose the kinds of tziurim that are going to create the kinds of feelings in our hearts that we want to live with. Rather than choosing the soundtrack, the film, the script that leads us down the pathway towards fear and worry and guilt, we have to choose a soundtrack, and we have to choose the words, and we have to choose the musical background, and we have to choose the sights and the sounds and all that goes into the scenario that's going to allow ourselves to feel happiness and peace of mind. And that's a choice that we are encouraged to make. When I discussed ideas of how to use our imagination with Rav Avraham Chaim Carmel, the son of Rav Aryeh Carmel, who translated the works of Rav Dessler, Michtav Mieliyahu, into English, I was discussing with him the concept that when a person focuses his mind on the oneness, on the unity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that there is no power other than him. There's a known segula ein oid milvado, the segula of the Nefesh HaChaim, that this has the power to actually protect us. That just focusing our mind on the concept of the oneness of Hashem has the power to change our reality and actually draw down more protection. Rav Carmel said to me that it's not only what we're thinking, but it's the effort that we put into changing the way that we think that is part of creating the change in our reality. When we put effort in to change the way that we think, the very effort that we put in is part of what brings about a new reaction from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when I discussed how to create Tziurei Halev, pictures of the mind, new scenarios that allow us to feel hope and happiness, Rav Carmel said to me, I believe this is the intention of Rav Dessler. Because how can a person help himself to feel hope if he has no clue of what to hope for? We have to put into our mind, we have to utilize the option of using our mind, come up with a scenario that we'd like to hope for, and that way we can fill our hearts with hope. And in this way, through changing our minds, through using the power of our choice and putting the energy in to change the kinds of thoughts that are going through our minds, we actually can draw down a different reaction from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem responds differently to us depending on the kinds of thoughts that we're choosing. So we mentioned two different aspects over here, that holding on to certain thoughts is going to bring down a different reaction from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Thoughts of the oneness of Hashem will bring down a more shmira, more protection, as it says in the Nefesh HaChaim. Thoughts of hoping are going to help ourselves to move away from fear and misery. But not only that, says the Sefer HaIkarim, that one of the most prevalent blocks to receiving the good that Hashem wants to give us is actually that we haven't hoped for the kindness from Hashem. That we need to hope for any goodness that we want from Hashem. And if we haven't hoped for it, that in itself could prevent us from receiving it. Explains Rav Avigdor Miller that a person, when they're davening, when b'shas tefillah, at the time that they're asking Hashem for something with their mouths, they have to hold hope in their minds. They have to be thinking thoughts of hope. So if we haven't got any kind of scenario of what we can be hoping for, it's very, very hard to hope. You can't hope in a vacuum. You have to have something to hope for. Just like you cannot dread something without knowing what you're dreading. Right? Similarly, in the positive, you can't hope for something without having a clue of what you're hoping for. And Rav Carmel said to me, this was the intention, in his opinion, of Rav Dessler in how to use the imagination. That in order to be able to hope, in order to be able to feel this oneness of Hashem, we have to come up with some kind of tziur lev, some kind of scenario in our minds, in pictures, in sound, in feeling, to create the feelings that we want to live with. Hashem wants us to live with hope. Kaveh el Hashem, chazak v'yamez libecha v'kaveh el Hashem. Hope to Hashem. Keep hoping. V'ani tamed ayachel. David HaMelech said of himself, I always anticipated to you, Hashem. I'm always hoping. David HaMelech lived in hope. This is the Jewish way to live. So living in hope has to do with looking forward to something good. And this is the first practical application that I want you to note down for yourself. We have to learn to choose to look forward to the good, the Ezras Hashem, that we would like to look forward to. Now, this doesn't mean we're telling Hashem what to do. Just as when I'm frightened of something, I'm not telling Hashem what to do either. Right? When I'm worried, when I'm fearful, I'm not telling Hashem what to do. I'm merely creating in myself all kinds of negative emotions. And so similarly, when I use my imagination to create inside myself a scenario of something that I'd like to hope for, that will create feelings of hope and trust and menuchas and nefesh, calmness of spirit within me. But I'm not telling Hashem what to do. I'm merely using my imagination as a tool to help myself to create within myself the kinds of feelings that I know Hashem wants me to live with. There was a young woman, and this story was just resolved just a few weeks ago. When she was 3 months pregnant, the doctor told her, you know, doesn't look good. I think all the signs show that you'll be having a Down syndrome child. There's problems with the kidneys, there's problems with the heart, there's too much fluid. All the signs are showing this, and you just have to get used to this situation. Now, she could have accepted the doctor's words and said, well, there we go, that's what's happening. She could have lived in worry and fear for the next 6 months. What she chose to do was to say, I want to hope for the best possible outcome, which is a completely and perfectly healthy baby. Hashem yazor, that's what I'd like to hope for. I want to live the next 6 months in hope. And so she began to use her mind to look forward to Be'ezus Hashem giving birth to a completely and perfectly healthy baby. Now, what would have happened if, chas v'shalom, she wouldn't have given birth to a completely healthy baby? Well, first of all, she would have been a lot calmer at the point where she's there because she's been hoping to Hashem and learning to trust Hashem and relying on Hashem and developing within herself a feeling of reliance on Hashem. Again, it wasn't only anticipating this specific outcome, but she was using her imagination to create within herself a feeling of reliance of Hashem, that she's trying to trust in Hashem, that she's hoping to Hashem. Kaveh al Hashem. It's not kaveh, trust, hope for only for the future, but trust to Hashem, that He is the one who's going to bring about the Yeshua. It's all in His hands. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is everything, has everything. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has it all inside His hands. Hashem is Soymech Noiflim. If we know anybody who's falling, HaKadosh Baruch Hu supports the fallen. If we know people who are bent over, Kfufim, they're bent over from their troubles, they can barely lift up their heads. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Zoykeith Kfufim. Hashem straightens up the bent and lifts us up. Hashem is Rofe Chaylim. Hashem heals the sick. Okay? And weiter. Hashem has it all, it's all in His power. He has everything, and we're the needy people down here. So it's a good shidduch, right? He has it all, and we're waiting for it all. So it comes together nicely when we hope to Hashem for it. So there she was, hoping for those 6 months, and she was able to create within herself a real feeling of menuchas and nefesh and calm. Looking forward to giving birth to a completely healthy baby. That's what she would wake up to in the morning, and that's what she would go to sleep with at night. About a month after the diagnosis, well, this doctor's imaginary diagnosis, her husband, who was trying to go along with his wife's optimism, went to a shalom zacher of one of his friends who had a baby son, and his friend said to him, you know, this is just a miracle, and the husband said, what's the miracle? He said, well, you know, he said, the doctors told me that I was going to have a Down syndrome child, that there was problems with the kidneys and problems with the heart. And Baruch Hashem, the baby's just fine. It was Siyata Shemaya that their young husband heard this. It gave him extra strength to be able to believe and to be able to support his wife that they could look forward to, Be'ezus Hashem, a completely and perfectly healthy baby. Another aspect of this is that when a person is put into a challenging situation, as soon as that challenge opens up around them, they're given an extra measure of strength and Siyata Dishmaya to carry them through it. There was an awful train crash a few years back, and an entire family from Beitar was wiped out, the Bernsteins, but the son-in-law, Reb Gutstein, he was the only survivor, his wife and child, unborn child and parents-in-law, the entire family was wiped out, and he was the only survivor, a son-in-law. And he wrote an open letter to the parents of Leiby Kletzky after the terrible tragedy that fell the Kletzky family. And his open letter read something like this. He said, I'm sure that at this time you are being filled with strength and emunah that's going to carry you through this time. I know it because that's what happened to me when I was plunged into my tremendously challenging situation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu filled me with tremendous emunah bitachon that carried me through the challenging times. That there is a tremendous outpouring of chesed and love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and support that comes down to a person in their time of challenge. But that only comes down at the moment of challenge. Before the fact, that's not the case. So why do we put ourselves into the moment of challenge when it didn't get there yet? We worry about all kinds of things that are going to be. Who knows what's going to happen? And we're imagining everything, and we're putting ourselves into all of the feelings of despair, sadness, rage, outrage, pain, all kinds of feelings we put ourselves into, because in our imagination we really know how to go to town with all the details of how it's going to be and how we're going to feel when, chas v'shalom, something happens and takes place. But when we do it in our imagination, we're not the beneficiaries of all of this outpouring of goodness and kindness and support of Hashem, because we're not actually in the Nisayon yet. So we're not getting the benefits of the Nisayon. We're only getting the downside of the Nisayon, and we're doing it to ourselves. So for all of these reasons, it's worthwhile hoping. And Baruch Hashem, she gave birth to a completely healthy, beautiful baby. She gave birth a few weeks, about a week and a half, I think, before Pesach. And she was so calm and so filled with positive energy that she was able to prepare the entire Pesach for her parents and in-laws, that they were all coming in to be with them because they knew that she was having this baby. They were all coming in to be with her. She said that she went in, she had a little sink in a cupboard and a table. And what she did was, 2 weeks before Pesach, while she was still expecting, she bought everything that she needed for Pesach. And she had her daughters and her friends sit down and just peel potatoes the whole day. And within one day, she'd filled the freezer with chickens and meats and desserts and kugels, everything she was going to need beyond. So she filled her freezer in one day. She was so, I'm just bringing this as an example, of because she was so positive and energetic. A person who is drained by anxiety, they don't have that kind of positive energy to do that. And she was upbeat and she was trusting, and Baruch Hashem HaHodel Hashem Kitoiv, she had a beautiful, healthy baby. If Chas V'Shalom, it wouldn't have been like that, and she'd been entrusting in a Kodesh Baruch Hu all that time, then certainly she would have got the influx of the extra Siyata Dishmaya, extra Emunah and Bitachon to carry her through that particular Nisayon. But there's no reason to bring it forward. Talking about fear and what it does to us. I remember one time years ago, I was going on a plane and there was awful turbulence, really bad turbulence. The plane was shaking. And I'm from England, I don't know if you can tell, but I really like a nice cup of tea. Well, the tea pot that was on the on the little trolley that they were bringing in the middle of the plane, the turbulence was so bad the teapot actually jumped up off the table and onto the floor of the plane. The plane was shaking so hard. Now, before I learned how to use my imagination, I would have been a basket case. I would have just been shaking, and my mind would have been filled with pictures of planes crashed, chas v'shalom, of who knows what, right? Anybody could end the sentence there of what I could have filled my mind with. But I chose to think of something else. I chose to imagine HaKadosh Baruch Hu's arms holding the plane and carrying the plane through the clouds, through the sky, all the way safely to the destination. In my mind's eye, I saw us all sitting in the plane, calmly and happily, and Hashem's arms holding that plane tightly and carrying it. Now, the truth is, when we think about reality, is that's the reality. There is nothing apart from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the only thing that keeps the plane in the sky is Hashem. Hashem's loving presence, and I say loving presence because this is a major aspect of a new way of thinking that we need to get into our heads, but that's for a different class. But Hashem's loving presence is always with us. And as I mentioned before, when a person uses their mind to think about Yichud Hashem, about that there is only a Kadosh Baruch Hu, this actually creates, according to the Nefesh HaChaim, Rav Chaim Volozhiner, an extra measure of protection. So certainly, while scaring myself silly is not going to give me any protection, but choosing to guide my mind towards Hashem is looking after me, Hashem is protecting me, Hashem is holding this plane up. If I can change something, this is going to actually draw extra protection to me. So that's what I chose to do. I chose to feel Hashem's hands around the plane, and my daughter, who was also a little bit freaking out, I helped her to think that too. And Baruch Hashem, we had a beautiful, smooth, meaning for ourselves, a beautiful, smooth ride within ourselves. We were able to relax. We were able to rest. We were able to not be stressed by what used to have been a stressful situation. Okay, so we've discussed that it's our imagination that creates the way that we feel. That Rav Carmel says that in his opinion, the intention of Rav Dessler is that we should use our imagination to conjure up within ourselves the scene of what we would like to hope for in order to allow ourselves to feel hope. And that hope actually creates more of a possibility that we can receive what we're hoping for. And says Rav Avigdor Miller, we have to hope for whatever it is that we would like. Whilst we daven for something, we have to hope. He actually goes a step further in his own inimitable way. And he says that if a person receives something without hoping for it, then he's actually indebted to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. He's missed out on what he was supposed to do. His chilek, meaning our job, is to hope, is to daven, and is to hope. And then Hashem does his bit and sends down the brachas. But it's part of what we need to do. It's not just like a luxurious extra, like the cherry on top of the cake. It would be so nice to live in hope, but I just can't get myself to do that because I don't think I should. I don't think it's real. It's got to be real, right? I don't think it's honest to be hopeful. You know, there's so many dangers in the world. I should just be real about it. But the truth is, our job is to hope. It's the Jewish approach to life to hope. And if we're not hoping, we're not doing it right. In fact, here's another practical application. Okay, so the first practical application is allow ourselves to hope. Create a scenario that you'd like to hope for in any of the situations that you're living with whatever challenge you're having in your life. Think about what you'd like to hope for. And Be'ezus Hashem, look forward to it. How do we look forward to it? Well, it's actually very interesting. But in Shmona Esrei, the Amida prayer, there's a bracha, Es Tzemach David. And in that bracha, we say the words, for we hope for your salvation kol hayom. We hope, ki lishu oscha, kivinu kol hayom. We hope for your salvation all day, every day. The Chofetz Chaim, in his Sefer Machaneh Yisrael, the book that he wrote for soldiers going out to battle, for Jewish soldiers being taken off into the Russian army. And also the Arizal brings this down. I saw it in a place where it was brought down, not in the writings of the Arizal, obviously, but I saw it written down in his name. That when we say these words, it is a segula, it is auspicious to actually anticipate the Geula Shleima, the ultimate redemption for all Klal Yisrael, but also to look forward to Hashem saving us from all of the troubles that we come across each day. It's a segula, it's auspicious. It's actually makes it more likely to happen when we say these words, Ki li yishuas hakivinu kol hayom, for we hope for your salvation each day, all day, to actually spend a few moments to think, what is it that I want Hashem to save me from today? Tomorrow afternoon, I, Baruch Hashem, have a dentist appointment for four of my children. I'm looking forward to it, ladies. Yes, I'm telling you, right? That's what I'm going to be davening for tomorrow morning. I'm looking forward to how this dentist appointment is going to go. I'm going to think about whatever happens during the day and how Hashem saves me, how Hashem rescues me, how Hashem makes it work out. B'seata d'shmaya be'ezus Hashem. And, says the Chofetz Chaim, says the Ari, it's a segula to be answered. It actually makes it more likely when I do that. A beautiful little scenario, little story I want to share with you that I just heard a lovely part of it just yesterday that I received in an email from one of the participants of one of the programs. When she began the program about, I believe it's now, maybe it's 2 years ago that she first took the program, she had a son who was sliding in his Yiddishkeit. He had been bumped around from yeshiva to yeshiva and was rarely home for Shabbos. And when he was very sullen. He didn't want to be home. There was a lot of tension and friction in the relationship between the parents and this son, and friction between the son and the other siblings. And it was extremely unpleasant. And the mother was full of blame towards this son for the way that he behaved to the father, the way that he behaved to her. And my heart went out to this boy when I heard of, when the mother told me of what was going on. I felt so bad for the son. I felt that he was really in a very difficult situation. He was struggling, but he wasn't getting also the support that he needed. And there was a lot of negativity going on over there, and tremendous anxiety and fear on the part of the mother. So we began the program, and bit by bit she began to teach herself to hope that Be'ezus Hashem, Yossi is getting stronger in his Yiddishkeit every day. He's getting stronger, and the relationship is getting better every day. And she began to look forward to certain signs of improvement. Again, this wasn't to tell Hashem that this was specifically how things needed to be improved, but it was to tell herself that she can hope that things can get better, rather than her mind producing on, you know, not in a way that she willed it, all kinds of negative scenarios. She chose to actively choose to look forward to some positive scenarios, even if she didn't know exactly what was going to happen, but to hope that they could happen, to hope that he would go to a yeshiva, that he would maintain a good relationship with his rabbis, to hope that he would get stronger in his Yiddishkeit and that she would see that he was davening, to hope he would choose to go to a good yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael the following year. Baruch Hashem, he did go away to yeshiva for a year in Eretz Yisrael, and he had a very good year, and he stayed in one yeshiva the whole year and maintained contact with the parents. And when he went home for Pesach, there was a wonderful, positive flow of love and appreciation for each to the other, the parents towards the son and the son, and Yossi towards his parents. And she sent me emails about how Baruch Hashem, you know, it was so much more pleasant to be with him. She had changed a lot. She was obviously so much more hopeful. And when we are hopeful for somebody else to Hashem, well, that changes the way the person feels as well. Yossi himself felt differently. Well, mommy's so much more hopeful. Mommy's so much more optimistic. And she's not laying guilt on him. And it changed a lot about the dynamics in the relationship as well when she was so much more hopeful. Well, she just sent me an email a few days ago. She said, Yossi just came home and brought me flowers for Shabbos. This was something that was so far from being a reality a year and a half ago when she began the program. It was just not a starter at all. But that he should show his appreciation to his mother in such a way, and she responded. I said, my eyes are filling with tears just from reading your words. It was so moving to me that this new relationship could have developed from her change in thought. That's what she did. She changed herself to feel more hopeful. And this spread out in all kinds of ways to create other positive feelings within her. And Baruch Hashem, this was the outcome. We were talking about Pesach. Just want to read a little letter given to me from a woman who learned for the first time to look forward to Pesach. I just want to let you know about my positive Pesach. Usually, I feel like hiding under my bed at Pesach, combined with having been made to clean and re-clean far too much, far too young, plus a heaping dose of heavy criticism as a child and as an adult. With four children, including a busy 15-month-old, I usually dread Pesach. I think many people can, identify with the feeling of dreading a lot of the aspects of Pesach. Add to that having my not-so-easy in-laws visiting from before Purim to just after Rosh Chodesh Nissan, a bas mitzvah to have right after Purim, and having guests for Seder, well, I really had to work on myself to keep looking forward to Pesach. But with a mindset change and lots of using my imagination in positive ways and huge siyata dishmaya, Pesach was really positive. The kitchen and all but one corner of the living room reserved for kidneys was ready for cooking by Tuesday before Pesach. On that Tuesday, I cooked, and it turned out I cooked everything just right. I had one pan of chicken left over after all of the Chag and Chol HaMoed and Yom Tov and Shabbos at the end. We enjoyed a nice meal of chicken and rice on the Sunday after Pesach. I was calm. I took off Wednesday to buy new linens from a gift certificate that I'd wanted, and I enjoyed a friend's bar mitzvah. I rested and relaxed with nothing to do on Erev Chag but burn the chametz and go to the park with the children and shower and nap. Pesach, which is often a time of stress in my marriage and with the kids over Chol HaMoed, was lovely. Tiolim worked out perfectly. Hot suppers from the freezer when we came home, arguing was a minimum. Topped off by the most beautiful Shvi'i Shel Pesach with a Kriyas Yam Suf Tish at midnight that I felt very connected to. Why not? I'd been looking forward to this all month. Thank you so much. Hoda l'Hashem ki tov. Baruch Hashem, what we can do for ourselves when we begin to hope. One of the most powerful side effects of hope is happiness. When a person allows themselves to feel real hope within herself, it's almost impossible not to be happy. It's hard to be happy when you're worrying and fearful. But when you're hoping for the future, it's hard to be miserable, and it's much easier to be happy. Happiness is something that I want to spend a few moments discussing. Many of us are familiar with a world that seems to be chasing happiness, but they're not actually chasing happiness. They're chasing what they think are the means to achieve happiness, and each time they acquire one of these ideas that they think is going to give them happiness, whether it's money, whether it's the particular marriage that they want, whether it's the status that they're looking for, once they achieve that, they find, well, this didn't give me happiness. They did a very interesting experiment where they interviewed patients very soon after they had an accident where they had become, I think, either paraplegic or quadriplegic, meaning they became disabled, that they no longer were able to walk around and move around. And they found that within 6 months, most of these patients had reachieved the level of happiness that they had before their accident. We understand that they had a dip in their happiness in the months after such a horrendous accident. But the fact that they went back to their previous level of happiness is counterintuitive. We would expect their level of happiness to be forever changed. But that wasn't found to be true. They went back to their habitual level of happiness, which shows us something very extraordinary. It shows us that our level of happiness is more formed by habit and the way that we feel inside than the circumstances that we find ourselves in. Not only is this true, but happiness does something extremely powerful in the world. The Zohar brings down, I've seen this quoted in many different places, the Zohar brings down that when a Yid, when a Jew goes down in this world with atzvus, with sadness, with bitterness, then he brings down judgment upon himself, upon the world. He brings down judgment. When a Yid goes in this world with simcha, with happiness, he brings down a ha'aras upon, he brings down a shining countenance from Hashem. Now we know that all of the brachas of this world come through the ha'aras upon him. Ha'er Hashem panav eilecha. May Hashem turn his face to shine towards you. This is the Birkas Kehanim, the bracha that the Kehanim give to the people. All of the blessings, when we say in Shmona Esri at the end, shine your face towards us. We know ki ba'or panecha nosatalanu Hashem elokeinu, in your shining countenance, that's where you give us all of your brachas, all of the good, comes through the shining countenance. And what makes this shining countenance come towards us? It's not a decision that has nothing to do with us, but actually we have an intrinsic role to play. We have a relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. We actually are the ones who are going to create the response, amazingly enough, by our own response to the situation that Hashem gives us. Hashem knows the package he's given us. Everybody's been given their own particular birth package and the challenges that came along with it. Their parents, their physical body and their state of mind, their abilities or lack of them, their siblings or lack of them, the community or lack of them, whatever we're given or not given. Hashem knows all of that. Hashem is not waiting for us to tell him, you did this, you did that. Hashem is waiting for us to say, okay, this is my response. And I'm going to choose happiness as a response. When I choose happiness, not because everything's going wonderful, but because I believe in happiness as an end in it and of itself. I'm pursuing happiness because that's the way Hashem wants me to live. I'm pursuing happiness because Hashem is longing to give to me. And all I need to do to receive this bracha of Hashem's shining face turning towards me is to arouse within myself happiness. And that's going to change everything. Little story to illustrate this. One time, Reb Zusha and Reb Elimelech, the holy brothers, were in exile in one of their travels, and they got thrown into jail, no fault of their own, somewhere in some dirty, dank cell, along with a bunch of drunken Russians. And this was a bit more depressing to them than other times that they might have been thrown into various different difficult situations, because there was one very smelly pot in the middle of this room that was meant to service all of these drunk, dirty peasants who were thrown into the cell together with them. Zusha, Zusha, what are we going to do? Said wailed with Elimelech. We can't learn Torah. We can't learn Torah because of this. The graph shall read the disgusting thing that's in the room here with us. We cannot learn Torah. What's going to be with us? How can we not learn Torah? And he began to wail. Melech, said Zusha, don't cry. How can I not cry? How can I not cry when I can't learn Torah? Zusha said, don't cry. In fact, we have to celebrate. Reb Melech looks at his brother, Reb Zusha, and doesn't understand. What are you talking about? What's this to celebrate over here? Reb Zusha said to Reb Elimelech back, look, there's a mitzvah we can do now that we never get a chance to do. We always have a mitzvah to learn Torah, every second of every day. But now we cannot learn Torah. And just as it's a mitzvah to learn Torah when we can, it's a mitzvah not to learn Torah when we can't. Come, Lomitans, let's dance and celebrate that we're doing this mitzvah now that we hardly ever get a chance to do. It's a rare mitzvah, right? It's a rare mitzvah. We're going to get a chance to do this rare mitzvah now. Come, let's dance. Rebbe Elimelech didn't need any more encouraging, jumped to his feet, and the two of them began a special happy dance in the middle of this cell. Most of the drunken Russians were in too much of a stupor to be able to even notice what was going on. But the guard heard what was going on, and he didn't like the commotion. He came over to the outside of the cell, and he rattled the door to try and get their attention. He couldn't get the attention of Reb Zusha and Reb Elimelech. They were too high in their simcha over there. But the sleeping peasant at the gate was roused as the door was shaken. And the guard said to him, "What's all this about? What's happening over there?" He looked all around him and he said, "It seems to be something to do with this pot. They seem to be very happy that the pot is in the room." He fell back to sleep, and the guard said, "I'm not having any of this. I'm not having them celebrate." He called and said, "Yidden, you yid, here, bring me the pot. I'm not having you celebrating this pot." And he removed the pot from the room. And Baruch Hashem, Reb Zusha and Reb Elimelech had even more to celebrate. They sang a song of praise to Kodesh Baruch Hu and sat right down without further ado to learn the Heilige Torah. The fact that we can choose to celebrate in the middle of what is an unfinished story is a chiddush. We usually think we have to wait till the end of the story to celebrate. But the truth is, we celebrate simply because we're Yidden. And that's reason enough to celebrate. There's a story of the Gerer Rebbe during the Second World War. One Friday night he was looking out at his congregation, and he thought to himself, they're more dead than alive. And of course they were watching death stalk the streets. They lived in fear. But he looked at them and he said he had to do something to rouse them from their fear. And he took them out into the forest, and they started singing and dancing. And they sang and danced the whole night long. When they came back into the town in the morning, later that day on Shabbos, where people came to the Rebbe and they said, "What was this? Singing, dancing all night long? What was it to celebrate, Sach HaKol?" He said, we're celebrating because we have to whom to hope. That's what we're dancing for. We have to whom to hope. We have a Eibishter. We're not like the Goyim. We're not like the nations of the world. We have to whom to hope. We have a Eibishter. We have somebody who we can hope to. And through hoping, they were able to fill themselves with simcha. And simcha changes the result. I heard a story someone told me in a similar vein of a woman who was in hospital. Never, she was hemorrhaging. And the doctors told her that if they couldn't stop the bleeding, she was going to have Chas v'Shalom, a surgery that would end her possibility of having children. And it was in Eretz Yisrael. And her husband heard this news and he went out. He brought a big music box. He started playing music loudly. He brought all his friends. He started dancing, celebrating there in the corridor of the hospital. I think only in Eretz Yisrael you can get away with such a thing. No one looked at them. They're used to people doing these kinds of things. The bleeding stopped and Baruch Hashem, she was saved. Now, of course, it's not going to work every time. But the fact is that simcha that is generated from within generates a new relationship. It changes the response that the Kodesh Baruch Hu responds to us. When we've changed ourselves, we've changed the whole dynamic of the relationship. Said Rav Mandel, the tzaddik of Bnei Brak, he would call out to Yidden to overcome their sadness and to be happy, saying that happiness is the strength and power of a Jew. He said that the pasuk in Yeshayahu, ki besimcha teitzeyun, because through simcha we go out, that simcha actually takes us out of a troubled situation. Don't wait to celebrate. Celebrate even in the beginning. We can celebrate wherever we are. We can find some mitzvah that we're doing. and start to celebrate that mitzvah. Start to feel the happiness in that mitzvah. Because the truth is, the Rambam, in Hilchas Lulav, says, the simcha a person has in doing a mitzvah and in loving Hashem who commanded the mitzvah is a great avodah. And anyone who prevents himself from this simcha is fitting to be punished. As it says, because you didn't serve Hashem with happiness and with a good heart. From this Rambam, we can understand that there is simcha within each mitzvah. Every mitzvah that we do is as full of simcha as a pomegranate is full of juice. There's tremendous simcha to be had from every mitzvah that we do. And if whatever we're involved in, we women are involved in so many mitzvahs. Even before we get married, we're helping the community. We're giving to people. We're doing chesed for people. We're davening for people. We're sharing good words of chizuk and encouragement with people. And when we're married, be'ezras Hashem, we're helping our husbands, we're helping our children. And throughout our lives, at every stage, at every situation, we're always in the situation to be able to do mitzvahs and help. We can choose to squeeze out the simcha from the mitzvah. And the word of the Rambam is very instructive over here. He says, whoever withholds from himself the simcha, whoever prevents himself from this simcha, is fitting to be punished. Meaning that we can withhold from ourselves the joy of doing the mitzvah. How do we do that? Very easy, ladies. Three words. Fear, worry, and guilt. As soon as we're fearful, worried, and guilty, all the joy in life is gone. We're not feeling any simcha shel mitzvah when we're busy being scared that we didn't that what's going to happen soon, or we're frightened, or we're living with perfectionism, we think we didn't do it good enough. All of this leads to a situation where we're missing the simcha that could be ours. So pursuing simcha as an end in and of itself, rather than pursuing what we believe to be the means to acquire simcha, but deciding to choose simcha as a way of life is going to be one of the major assets in changing and transforming our lives. One woman was in an extremely desperate situation. I don't go into the details of it right now, but with her husband and with children of hers, all kinds of difficult situations, she felt that there was a massive gray cloud over her head and she felt she couldn't shake it. She said, I was just sharing with her some of these words, and she said to me, I understand that Hashem wants me to make myself as happy as I possibly can. And later on, she came back to me and she said, that was the beginning of my Yeshua. Baruch Hashem, with her husband, with her children, everything started to resolve itself. But she said, that's the beginning. When I made that decision to pursue happiness within myself, to make myself happy, that was when things began to change. So, we've discussed so far allowing ourselves to hope, to create for ourselves a scenario for which we can hope, and to allow ourselves to feel that hope, to know it's what Hashem wants us to do, to live with hope, to anticipate the Yeshua every time that we dive in the Shemona Esrei, to look forward to the particular salvations that we need each and every day, to allow ourselves to feel happiness, to pursue happiness through finding mitzvahs that we're doing, allowing ourselves to feel the mitzvah that is inside that the mitzvah that we're doing, to dance, to sing. Sometimes we need externals to help ourselves to feel simcha, but pursuing simcha in and of itself will create within us the means to receive Hashem's ha'aras upon him. So this is going to help us with worry and fear. When we can look forward to the future, when we can try and tune into Hashem's protective, that when I'm trusting in Hashem's oneness, that he's the only one protecting me, this can actually draw more protection to me. So this can help me to overcome my fear and my worry. But what about guilt? So I want to briefly describe how I view guilt. And it's a little bit semantics. It's a little bit to do with how we use the words, because many people will use these words in different ways. So I'm going to describe how I use these words for my own purposes. And it's not across the board, but you'll understand what I'm talking about soon. We use two different words over here. One is guilt, and one is remorse. So I'm going to use remorse as a positive feeling. I feel remorseful when I've done something actually wrong. And it's a positive feeling. If I didn't feel remorseful when I've done something wrong, then there would be no reason for me to do tshuva. But remorse is a positive feeling that shows that I have values and that I've done something that was not entirely in line with my own values. And so it's a message to myself, do tshuva, straighten up, and then when I've done tshuva, I no longer need to feel remorseful. I've done what I need to do. Of course, David HaMelech said, Chatasi Negdi Samid, my aver is always before me, and there are various levels of tshuva that we can aspire to acquire. But I need to keep it before me so I don't transgress it again. But I don't need to live with the feeling of remorse all the time. Guilt, according to my purposes, and again, people will use this in different ways, but the way that I'm using it, guilt is a feeling that we feel when we haven't actually done something wrong, but we feel bad anyway. And we could feel guilt for a number of reasons. We could feel guilty because other people are upset with us that we didn't do everything they wanted us to do. Other people can make us feel guilty because they expected more of us. Or they didn't want us to do something and we went ahead and did it because it was right for us. And it was the right thing to do. But they were upset by that. So they can then lay guilt on us to make us, they want us to feel bad that we went and did something that they didn't want us to do. But we've actually done nothing wrong. We've actually done the right thing. But we still feel guilty. So why am I feeling guilty if I did nothing wrong? Another reason why we might feel guilt, and this is extremely prevalent, is because I didn't do it perfectly. Because I didn't do it exactly the way I wanted to. Now, this needs a bit more explanation. Anybody would admit if I would ask you, are you a malach? Are you completely perfect in everything that you do? Everyone would admit, no, I'm not perfect. I'm not a malach. I'm not an angel. Of course I'm not. Okay, so if you're not perfect, that means you're going to make mistakes, right? Okay, I guess that's true. Yeah, I guess I'm going to make mistakes. And I don't really want to. Okay, but it's true that imperfect people will sometimes make mistakes and will not always get everything 100% right, correct? Yeah, correct. Okay, so if I did something and it didn't come out 100%, was I wrong? Did I do something wrong if I didn't manage to get it perfect? Okay, this is something that needs a lot of thought in our generation because perfectionism is a terrible sickness that has spread like the plague. But if I examine it honestly, I will have to say that not doing it 100% doesn't mean that I did something wrong. In fact, the only creation, the only creature in all of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's creation that can make a mistake is mankind. Animals don't make mistakes. They run on instinct. But and when we look at a piece of artwork that is a teeny bit imperfect, that's the sign that it was made by a person and not made by a machine. It's extraordinarily more valuable because it was made by a person rather than by a machine. So the fact that we can make mistakes makes us more valuable also in Hashem's eyes. Hashem loves us more than the angels precisely because we make mistakes. So if I did something wrong, or I didn't do something 100%, let's say I've done tshuva, I fixed it up, I've done everything that I can do, but I'm still feeling guilty, I'm feeling bad, I'm feeling like I'm bad. Why am I bad? Because I wasn't perfect. It's ridiculous, right? It's ridiculous. Why should I feel bad that I'm not perfect when there's no way I can be perfect? I was created imperfect. I'm going to die imperfect after 120 years. And I'm going to do many more imperfect things throughout my life. There's a beautiful bumper sticker. I've learned so much from my mistakes that I'm planning on making a lot more of them. Beautiful. Yeah, I'm going to make a lot more mistakes and learn from them. Be'ezras Hashem Yisbarach. So guilt, the way that I'm using it, is the kind of feeling that I'm bad simply because I'm me.
simply because I'm imperfect, I'm bad, and so I'm feeling guilty because of that. If I'm living with such a feeling, I'm doomed to despair, I'm doomed to misery. I have to learn to feel remorseful for what I've actually done wrong. But if I haven't done something wrong, I have to release that feeling completely, even if it's being put upon me by somebody else. I'll tell you two brief stories. A woman in her 60s was telling me this story in one group that I have, a group of seniors. And she was telling me that her elderly mother had to go through a certain medical procedure. And she took time off from her family, from her work obligations, to go and be with her mother all through this. And Baruch Hashem, the procedure was successful. She was released from the hospital and put into a recuperation home. And Baruch Hashem, the nursing care was wonderful over there. And she didn't need the daughter to be there all the time. And her family needed her more. But her mother began to call her, saying, "I want you here. I want you here." And the daughter said, "Mommy, I'm so sorry, but I can't come today." And then the mother upped the volume. "I need you here. I need you here." And the daughter was feeling terribly guilty. She called her rav. She said, "What do I do? My family needs me. I have these responsibilities, but my mother's giving me this. I need you. I need you. What should I do? What actually should I do?" And the rav said to her, "Tell your mother, 'Mommy, I love you. I want to be with you. I'm looking forward to coming to you. And as soon as I can, I'm going to come to you. Okay, I'm waiting to see you.' Tell her this message, but you cannot, you don't go out of what you need to do for your family, fulfill your responsibilities, and go when you can." When the woman heard this from the Rav, she was relieved of the guilt. She says, "I know I'm doing the right thing, even if my mother was initially displeased, but the fact that I knew I was doing the right thing enabled me to release the guilt that I was feeling." And in the end, the mother ended up feeling better and stopping to say these things and appreciating the visits that she gave her. Now, sometimes we're not actually living with healthy people, and they'll still continue giving us guilt, even when we know we're doing the right thing. In such a situation, we have to learn to just shut off and tell myself, they are not the ones defining what's right in my life. And having a Rav and having a Baal Eitzah is absolutely what we need in these kinds of situations. In order to know what I'm doing the right thing, and when I know I'm doing the right thing, I do not need to feel any more guilt. So just with a beautiful story over here of a woman who was able to help herself overcome guilt. She was, her sister was making a getaway, a Shabbos away, an inspiring Shabbos, and she really wanted her sister to come with her. And she really didn't know, should she leave her family for Shabbos? She really didn't feel comfortable doing that. She discussed it with her husband. And her husband was really happy for her to go. For one Shabbos, to get an inspiring, rejuvenating Shabbos, he was happy for her to go. And she decided that, yes, she would go. She decided with her and her husband that it was the right thing, that she should go. And she would go and enjoy herself. She went away for Shabbos, and she was having a wonderful time. She enjoyed the seudas and the speeches and the camaraderie with everybody there. And at a certain point during the Shabbos day meal, the scene came into her mind, the thought came into her mind, "You're a terrible mother. What kind of a mother leaves her family for Shabbos and goes away? You're having such a nice time. What about your poor children left at home without a mother?" And her imagination created for her the scene of crying children lonely at home. So she sat with that image and scenario in her mind for a couple of seconds, and then she said to herself, "Just a minute, that's not true. My children are happy at home. I'm sure they're having a wonderful time. I'm having a great time. I'm doing the right thing." She said, based on something that I said in class, she said she took this big chunk of guilt, and she said there was this there was a beautiful mountain area where they were. She said she took the guilt and she threw it over the cliff down into the abyss. That's it, the guilt's gone. She said she felt free and wonderful, and she enjoyed the rest of Shabbos. When we just take the time to think, I'm doing the right thing. If I did the wrong thing, I did tshuva already. I'm not bad because I made a mistake. I'm not bad because I'm not perfect. I will try better next time. And I look forward to Moshe after the Shema Be'ez as Hashem. I'll be able to do better next time. But don't live in guilt. Guilt is a cultural Jewish response. It is not an authentically Jewish response. Remorse is Jewish. Do tshuva, that's Jewish. That's Yiddish. That's Torah. But guilt is not. So we have some practical ways that we can help ourselves to overcome fear and worry. Number one, through looking forward to choosing what to look forward to and to really create within ourselves a scenario that we can look forward to. And whenever we find ourselves creating for ourselves a picture and a scenario of fear or worry, we right away replace it, choose to replace it strongly with whatever I rather would like to look forward to and hope for. Allow myself to hope. Allow myself to pursue happiness as a goal in and of itself, because living in happiness, living with simcha, is the way Hashem wants us to live. Look forward to the Yeshua daily, for the big Yeshuas we need in our lives, for the daily Yeshuas that we need in our lives. And throw guilt into the abyss. Don't live with the guilt that other people want to put on you, or the guilt that perfectionism tries to put upon you. Throw it over into the abyss. Let it go. Know that it's not yours. And that when you can rid yourself of this, Be'ez Ez Hashem, we will be free to live a life of Menuchas HaNefesh. I want to end with a story. And soon we'll open for questions. But I just want to end with an amazing true story that happened many years ago in New Mexico. There was a earthquake. And much of the city was flattened in this earthquake. And amongst other major city buildings that were flattened was the hospital. Of course, the emergency personnel went along and started digging, and they went floor after floor. They found no survivors until they found an entire ward where there was survivor after survivor, all in one particular ward, way below where they'd found any other surviving people. And they were astonished. Who were these patients? Who were these people in the hospital that had survived? They were newborn babies in their mother's arms. And they survived 10 days in the rubble until they were rescued. This sounds unbelievable. Their mothers had been killed in the earthquake. But they survived. What were they surviving on? They were surviving on closeness to mommy, closeness to the loving source of life. That was what they were living on. Their minds weren't clouded with thoughts of, we'll never make it. We can't survive. Who knows what's going to happen? They weren't killing themselves with worry and fear or killing themselves with guilt. They were just enjoying proximity and closeness to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And through that, I'm closest to their parent, obviously the mother. And through that closeness to the loving parent, even though the mother was no longer alive, they were miraculously able to survive 10 days, way beyond what nature could have had in store for them. David HaMelech said that he made himself kagamal alei imai, as a nursing babe in its mother's arms. This kind of feeling of reliance on Hashem, of holding into our minds, of hoping to Hashem, looking to Hashem as our loving parent, that He is all that we need. We don't need anything else. We don't need to worry or fear or guilt ourselves. We just need to know that Hashem has everything, is everything, and that He wants to give to us. And when we hold on to this proximity to Kadosh Baruch Hu, to hoping to Kadosh Baruch Hu, Be'ez Ez Hashem, we will fill ourselves with the simcha, with the happiness that we can experience in this world. And then Hashem will turn His face truly to shine upon us and will bring down all of the blessings that we so are hoping for. In a moment, Be'ez Ez Hashem, I will open up for questions. Just one second, please. Okay, in order to ask a question, please push *6. And Be'ez Hashem will be able to answer. We'll have questions now.
Hello.
Hi, Hinda.
Yeah, there are a couple
Hi,
of
Hinda.
People. Yes, yes, Jolie.
Hi, sorry. Yeah, if you don't mind.
Fine,
I
so
wanted
just before
to just,
we have the questions, Jolie wants to make a small
yeah.
Note. Go ahead, Jolie.
Okay, sorry. I really will keep it very, very brief. I just wanted to take a little second to invite everybody who is on this call to two things. One is to take something from the class today into their lives, and I personally already have found many things that I could take. It was just, it's amazing how each time I hear you, I hear something new and inspiring and really something that I can bring into my everyday life. So I want to invite everybody to, A, take something from today's class into their life. And I also want to invite everyone to your upcoming series and experience what so many other people have experienced, which is really what this class was about, so much menuchas ha-nefesh, whether we actually get to be zocha to see miracles, which actually so many people who have taken your class have, and lefachot just be able to have that menuchas ha-nefesh. So anyone is interested, please be in touch with us and let us know. And we look forward to sharing what you, the amazing things that you have given to us tonight to experience more of in the future. So I wanted to thank you and invite everybody.
Thank you, Jolie. Okay, there are, Baruch Hashem, a lot of ladies who want to ask questions. So whoever goes first, please do go ahead and have patience because Be'ezus Hashem, we will allow, you know, a good 10 minutes or so to answer questions from the ladies on the line. So whoever's first, please go ahead with your question.
I guess.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was first. Okay. Hashem is amazing to me, and I see Hashem in everything. Yiras Hashem is not a fear of God. So just understanding that the past couple of months, I mean, I've always, like everybody else, I've always gone through difficult times. But lately, it's more physical. I get nervous and I get anxious, and I feel like I'm choking. And I've gone to doctors with it because I thought maybe there's something there. I do get panic attacks. I do get anxiety. Is there anything that you can suggest to just stop the choking? Because I feel like I'm not getting air to my brain.
Okay, so a lady was in one of the programs, and after class number one, she came to me, and she could barely draw breath. It was painful for me to witness her speaking because she was kind of joking like this and really barely able to talk. She told me that since she'd had a traumatic birth experience, she couldn't breathe, barely. And so I encouraged her to every day do a deep relaxation guided imagery exercise, which would really help her deeply relax and to look forward to being able to draw breath completely and healthily. And that she would begin to hope that she'll be able to do this and look forward to that becoming her reality. And I think it was about 10 weeks later, we were sitting around in the same class and people were sharing their success experiences. And she piped up, you know, it's been weeks since I even thought about how I breathe. Her breathing had become so normal and natural that she'd even forgotten that she had had a breathing problem. So I encourage you to create for yourself the hope that you will be able to, Be'ezus Hashem, breathe completely normally and in a relaxed fashion. Know that many, many physical symptoms come from stress and anxiety, and that when you learn to relax yourself, you'll be able to free yourself of most of these symptoms. Be'ezus Hashem.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, next, please.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, what can I do to just think of Hashem during the day? I find it hard to remember that successes come from Him and challenges are from Him also, and I find myself getting very annoyed when somebody does something towards me as opposed to trying to remember that it's from Hashem.
Okay, that's a great question. So Rav Dessler actually answers this, And he says that if we want to gain a new habit, in this case, the habit would be when I have a challenge or something happens that's difficult, remembering that it's from Hashem. He says what we have to do is prepare ourselves many times in our imagination so that when the actual event happens, we are ready for it. So what I would suggest to you is think of the specific situations where it's hard for you to remember that it's from Hashem, such as when a child answers back or when you know, when you made a beautiful meal and it totally gets destroyed, or certain challenging situations that you remember in the recent past that were hard for you. And imagine how you respond to such a situation in the best possible way with saying that I know this is all from Hashem, that Hashem is with me in this, however you would like ideally to respond to this. And then you will, and he says, imagine this many times in your imagination. It means it takes practice. Okay, I would say before you go to sleep each night, take a minute before you, you know, before you actually go to sleep, just to imagine the kind of challenging situation that you could be in and how you respond in the best possible way that you would like to respond. And then you're creating within yourself hope that this is how you will respond. And this is a tried and tested method, said Rav Dessler. So, Be'ezus Hashem, this will help you. And I've seen many situations where women have been able to really change their responses to all kinds of situations. One woman told me she now is just calm all the time with her children. She used to be highly stressed. And now she finds she's able to respond calmly all the time with her children since she started to practice this in her mind. So you can do that for yourself as well.
Is it better to try to imagine myself reacting or to try to imagine the situation changing?
It depends on what you want. If you want the situation to change, then you can look forward to the situation changing. If what you want to do is change yourself, then you need to imagine yourself changing. But you could do both. You can prepare yourself. Because, you know, the world's not always going to go smoothly and perfectly the way that we want it. So there are going to be situations where you're going to need to respond in your ideal fashion. And so it's a good idea to prepare yourself for that with, you know, some kind of imaginary challenge that's not has to show life and death, but a daily kind of a challenge. And missing the bus or those kinds of little details. And then how you respond the way you would like to with complete bitachon. And then also if there's a particularly challenging situation, let's say chinuch areas with children, looking forward to them for sure creating a hope that they will be resolved in the best possible way is certainly also what I would advise you to imagine as well.
Thank you. Is there time to ask another question or is there somebody waiting?
So people waiting, you can go ahead, sure.
Okay. No, I wasn't sure the distinction between davening and asking Hashem for things and the imagination part.
Okay, so Rav Avigdor Miller actually says this. He says that when we daven with our mouths, we need to have hope in our thoughts. So our thoughts need to be full of hope, even as we're davening with our mouths. Tefila needs to be tefila with hope. We need to look forward to and anticipate and hope. You know, what we understand to be hope, we have to try and feel hopeful that this tefillah is going to be answered. But as Hashem, as we're asking for it, whatever it is that we're asking for with our mouths, we need to hope for it in our thoughts.
But if we're asking for it, then we're assuming it's not, we're not thinking positively if we're asking for it. If we're saying,
well, we know
so
that it's not here right now. Meaning it's not here right now. So I want it, so I'm asking for it. And as I'm asking for it, I'm hoping that it's going to change. It's as Hashem soon. But I have to face the reality that at this present second, it isn't here yet. I'm not going to deny that I'm in pain. You know, if my toenail hurts, I'll say, please Hashem, heal my toenail. At the same time that I'm looking forward to the pain disappearing within the next day.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, yeah, next
thank
question.
You very much.
Go ahead, next question.
Okay, so I guess I can ask. So I have a question regarding relationship with my mother-in-law. So basically it's something that I really try to work on, and it's something that I think I have come a long way with, but she's not a critical person, Baruch Hashem, but she is not a giving person. She has a hard time giving, and I came to the point where I don't expect, and I really a lot of times I don't even want now from her. But what happened was that she happens to have a condo in Florida, and I have a teenage daughter, and my daughter wanted to go with a friend of hers for a week, a few days, and I didn't think of it. I said, thought as a granddaughter, why not? I said, ask, you know, and she asked. And my mother-in-law tells her, like, right away, not an option. And my daughter was taken aback because she's not used to such a kind of response from us. Mm-hmm. And she told it over to her father and to, you know, to us, my husband and I. And my husband was very annoyed, and I was. But I kind of I didn't expect it to happen with her, but it's the kind of thing I knew it could happen, you know, it could happen for my mother-in-law. And I told my daughter, listen, she, you know, and I tried to, you know, put the positive, you know, in her, in my daughter about my mother-in-law. I said, look, she's, you know, she says nice things, and she just, you know, Hashem will give. If it's meant for you to have it, you'll get it from other places. But really, really, I was a little bit annoyed deep down, but I tried, I didn't want to show it to my daughter, and my husband was even more annoyed than I, and I tried to put it in good light in front of him anyway, because I knew anger is dangerous, and I told him, listen, you know, look at her positive things, but he was still angry, and he kept ignoring her texts during the week, and finally he brought himself to call her, and he spoke, you know, he spoke quite naturally, but he was still upset. And then we met my father-in-law by Simcha. My father-in-law tells my husband that, again, I was deep down upset, I was just covering up, but my husband was kind of annoyed a little that I wasn't giving him sympathy, you know, I wasn't being empathetic, but I didn't know what the right thing to do was. But then my father-in-law tells my husband, look, out of the blue, just not relating it to the situation that had happened, he says, look, you know, you're making a simple, whatever, I want to pay for the girls' dresses and for, you know, and for your wife's dress, for my dress. And my husband came home, and I was very annoyed. And I don't even know why I was so annoyed. I kept it in. I didn't know how to react. And I kind of like, I don't want to take from her. Like, even though it's coming from him, maybe, but it, really she's involved. And I didn't know how to react. I didn't know if my husband would accept that I, you know, don't want to take and that we shouldn't take. And I did a funny thing, and I kind of like, here or there, I had sent challis to my mother-in-law for Shabbos, and I knew that she appreciated it sometimes. And I said I was making calls for Friday. I knew they're going away to Florida for 2 weeks. Maybe I'll send Dolklach. I know that they can't get it there. And I wanted to offer to send it, of course. And I called my mother-in-law. She didn't answer. And I called my father-in-law, and he told me to call her. But he also, like, didn't really want to accept it, and she didn't accept it. And then my husband was, like, upset at me, and he goes, why do you do such a funny thing? Why do you offer chalas? I don't even know why I did it, I said. But I was so annoyed, and I didn't. And I knew it worked, you know, at a certain point, and whatever. At the end, I was, like, even more upset. Why? Because here it was refused. And second of all, here I have to accept something, maybe, from them, and I really don't want to take it. So I'm, like, all confused. Am I supposed to take when they want to give if I don't want to take? And how do you, you know, like, you know, how do you really deal with such a kind of relationship?
Okay, so this is it's a really good question, okay? And many of us are familiar with these kinds of ins and outs with relationships. Relationships are seldom simple. People are not simple. People are very, not just complex, but there's a lot going on within people. And they'll want to give, they don't want to give, they want to control when they're giving. And right. You did a beautiful thing by making the challis. You really did a beautiful thing.
I don't know, because I felt bad afterwards. Like, I felt worse when it was refused.
It was a good thing that you did. But let's try and get a line over here. How can we approach relationships in the healthiest way? So the Pasuk says in Tehillim, Ashrei Shekel Yaakov Be'ezrei. Ashrei, delighted, lucky is the person who the God of Yaakov helps him. So the Mefarsh over there asks, why does it bring down the God of Yaakov? Why not Avram and Yitzchak? He says, Yaakov Avinu, when he left his father's home, he didn't trust not in his father, he didn't trust in his mother. He had to run away just with his stick. He crossed over the river. He put his faith completely in a Kodesh Baruch Hu. He says, when a person does that, then Hashem will fulfill all that's missing for him. Hashem will give him everything that he needs. That our job is to put our trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to look to Him to fulfill what we need. So, my daughter needs a break in the summer. Hashem's going to give her a break. I can do some ishtadlus, and I can ask my relation who has a home, but I'm looking to Hashem to fulfill what I need. So, whether this person says yes or no, it's up to Hashem, because Hashem has harbei shluchim lamakim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has hundreds of ways that he can give my daughter a great vacation. And so,
I'll do some hishtadlis that appears to me to be normal hishtadlis, but I won't get too upset if they say no, because it's only because Hashem is organizing this. And if that doesn't work out, something better will. So my trust is all in Hashem. Hishtadlis, the effort that I put in, I have to negotiate down here with different people. You know, a lot of the times, my in-laws, my parents, my friends, my neighbors will be the shlichim. They will be the people that will be down here, the means. Hashem doesn't necessarily send down a condo from the heavens and make it land on a desert island and give you an invitation to come there, right? We don't expect it to be completely miraculous. Hashem works through nature. So sometimes it will be through this relative, or sometimes it will be through this friend. Sometimes it won't be through any of them, and Hashem will send all of a sudden, a friend of mine from 20 years ago came to visit me, and she said, you know what? I want to give you a vacation. I'm here in Eretz Yisrael for 5 months, and I've got this beautiful villa. Come and stay in my villa for a week. That's what she said to me. I didn't come through anywhere. She just said, come stay. I'm going away. I have this beautiful villa. Just bring your family and come and have a vacation for a week. It can come from anywhere, right? But the essence is, Shekel Yaakov B'Sivri, he's looking to Hashem for the Yeshua. As long as we're hoping to Hashem, then we're not going to expect or get upset with the people down here if they're helping us or not helping us. We don't expect anything from people down here, but we look to Hashem as our parent. As David HaMelech said, Ki Avi Ve'imi Azavuni Va'Hashem Yasveini, my parents have abandoned me, my parents left me, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu gathered me in. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is carrying me. He is providing for all my needs. So when I look to Hashem to provide everything, I'm still going to negotiate with the people down here, but I'm not going to be upset with them if they don't give me what I wanted, because my needs only come from Hashem. And so with that line, when I go across with that approach, I will not take personally what people are doing down here. And it will take practice, but that is going to help us to also get, Be'ezras Hashem, what we need from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. In many situations when we rely on Hashem, as the Mefarish said, it was the Matak Midvash, says on that Pasuk in Tehillim, that Hashem, whoever goes with complete faith in a Kodesh Baruch Hu, Hashem will fulfill his needs. So we'll get our needs filled, but in addition, we won't need to have all this stickiness in the relationship, because we won't have unfulfilled expectations of other people, because we'll know that it's only Hashem's shlichim. Did that answer the question?
Not really, because I think that I graduated a little bit. It's two. It's more that, like, when they want to give me, like you say, in a controlling way, because like they're giving me from the, my father-in-law has a sister who whatever makes dresses, and he wants her to give in, he wants to do it. I don't want to take it. Am I allowed not to take it? Is it right, or am I hurting them by not taking it?
If you feel that it's coming in a controlling way, I'll tell you another story, okay, of a situation. This is an amazing story. Recently, a woman shared this with me, that she has an extremely controlling parent, extremely controlling father, and uses money to control them frequently. And the family is all, they're all in various stages of speaking or not speaking to this parent, but she's always been the good one who's really tried very hard. But she understood, and at some point the father told her, I'm going to give you $25,000 to put down in an apartment. Mm-hmm. And so she, you know, that was a long time ago, and she felt very good, you know, she was very excited to be able to own her own apartment. But at a certain point, after a lot of work about this relationship, she realized it's a very controlling relationship. If he gives her this money, he's going to expect her to be beholden to him her whole life in this apartment, and she's decided she's not going to take that money. She's just not going to take the money. She doesn't want his money. She doesn't want his controlling. She'll be respectful, polite, but she's not going to accept his control over her anymore. And she'll trust Hashem's going to help. Well, over the course of the next year, she got a phone call from a certain aunt of hers who told her, I know the relationship is difficult with your father. She didn't know anything about the money. She said, I'm going to give you $10,000. And she had another very wealthy cousin, and he also knew about the difficult relationship with the father, and he didn't know anything about the money, but he said, I'm going to give you $10,000. And another relative said, I'm going to give you $5,000. She ended up with $25,000 to put down in an apartment in miraculous ways that she hadn't solicited in any way. And she said she felt that it was a big kiss from a Kodesh Baruch Hu telling her, you decided that you weren't going to take from that negative relationship. I'm filling in everything that you needed. So
I hope that could be more of an answer for you, that if you feel that it's not a controlled relationship. Yeah.
I think so, yeah. Thank you.
Yep. Okay, my pleasure. Okay, any other questions, ladies? So thank you all so much for joining me. It's really, it's thrilling for me to be able to share these ideas, and your questions draw out more of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's inspiration that he brings down to us all. I thank you so much for joining me and look forward to working with anybody who decides to take the next step and join the conference, the teleconference Be'ez Hashem Think Positive that will be starting next week. I thank you so much for joining me. And this class, the recording is from the moment that this class ends, the recording will be available from the playback number for anybody that wants to hear. And in addition, a link to the class will be sent to all those of you who have emails. I just want to mention that the technical point. And I just want to mention that the class is oriented to women of all ages, of all stages, from 18-year-olds fresh out of college to Elta Bobby's in their 85, 90s. I've had women in various different programs at every stage, at every junction in life. And because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one, and his oneness spreads throughout the entire multifaceted creation. So the emes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends down is equally applicable to all of us in all of our different faces and stages and times. Thank you so much for joining me. And have a freilich and tamid, a wonderful and a happy forever. I wish you all. Call to bye-bye, ladies.